Welcome to Martha Runs the World, a podcast with a new take on running, fitness, and all things health-oriented. I'm Martha Hughes, your host, and each week I present a new topic that is of interest to all runners. Welcome to episode 127 of Martha Runs the World. Thank you so much for joining me. This is a great episode. I have a very, very special guest. Miriam Gilbert has been a runner for a long time. She's an ultra runner. She's a writer. She has an amazing blog. Really, her blog is just terrific. She's a very prolific writer and runner, and she's had some health problems, and I wanted her to talk to us today about her problems with vitamin B12 deficiency. I'm going to be talking with her in just a moment. After that, in my Tales of the Trail, I'm going to be giving you a race report of a race I volunteered at this weekend. So be prepared for that. And at the end of my wonderful race report, it's very positive, yes, I do have a little rant about transportation. So stay tuned for that. And here is Miriam Gilbert. Will you welcome to the program author and ultra runner Miriam Gilbert. Hi, Miriam. How are you?
I'm pretty good, Martha. How are you this morning?
I'm doing great. Thank you so much for being on the show. Now, I love your blog. When did you start writing it?
Actually, it'll be 4 years, I think, in May. Yeah, I started my website and then I added my blog shortly thereafter.
Okay. It is so all-encompassing. You put a lot of effort into it, which is what people really should do.
Thank you.
It takes a lot of work. I see how much work you put into it. What made you start writing it?
Oh, wow. What a great question. Actually, it was my son's idea. My son, Sebastian, who immediately after Arianna Huffington invited me to write for the Huffington Post back in 2016, he said, Mom, you got to create a website. You got to have a blog and write about ultra running and spirituality, two of your favorite things. And that's how it all got started. It was my son, Sebastian, really encouraging me to create the website.
Well, you've also been running for a long time too, haven't you?
Yes. My first road race was a 5K back in 1989. Yeah. And yeah, I've been running ever since. I have not taken any time off from running except for 2009 when I was unable to walk normally and to run at all because of what I didn't know at the time was myelopathy of the spinal cord due to severe B12 deficiency. But I didn't let that stop me from moving. I just kept going.
That's great. What helped you make the leap into ultras?
Oh, well, let's see. One day in 2005, I believe it was January, I was home from winter break from my university teaching job at the time. And I was watching 60 Minutes. And Leslie Stahl was interviewing two people, Dean Karnazes and Pam Reed, and the topic was ultra running. And I thought to myself, what the heck is ultra running? I was fascinated by the interview, how they train, what they eat, why they run. And I thought, oh my God, who runs 50 miles? Who runs 100 miles? Who's that crazy? And I just was so inspired and I was in such awe of them that I immediately got on the desktop and started to Google ultra marathons. And the first one that popped up was the JFK 50, which takes place in, starts in Maryland, goes through West Virginia, and then back to Maryland. And that's how it all got started.
Yeah. Well, you were inspired by two of the best for sure.
Yeah, definitely. I didn't even know who they were. I had no idea who they were. I had no idea they had books, and I ran out and got the books, and I just took it from there.
Well, that's true. I mean, if you're not familiar with running or sports, you might not know who they are, but we certainly know who they are.
Yeah, that's for sure. Yeah. The only running that I knew about was, 5Ks and 10Ks and half marathons and marathons. And I got all that information from Runner's World magazine when it was a magazine back in the day. Yeah, and then ultra running was a completely different world, and I was intrigued and fascinated, and I just I fell in love with it, and I'm still going. So yeah, I've been running since 2005 ultras. So that's about 16 years, a little over 16 years.
Oh yeah, back when Runner's World was a great magazine, and you looked forward to it every month. I remember that.
Yes, yes, I subscribed. I was so happy.
Oh, I know, it was wonderful back then. Your post that you made in a Facebook group about B12 deficiencies was really illuminating for me, and that's what got me interested in talking to you. Can you tell us about how you learned you were deficient?
Yeah, yeah. And first of all, thank you so much for reading it and for reaching out to me. That means a lot. Yeah, I started to have these symptoms. My fingers would twitch and it would hurt when, you know, the twitchings occurred. My feet sort of got numb and I had tingling sensations and I had difficulty walking. I was not walking normally as I normally do. And it just kept, you know, progressing. And that's when I went to my primary, who then sent me to a neurologist. And this all started, I think, early on in 2008. And it just progressed where I would have difficulty sleeping. The tingling was very painful. The numbness was very painful, the twitching. And then my right toe would just get stiff and curl like backwards, like pointing at me in the middle of the night. I would scream in excruciating pain. My husband, John, would try to massage my toes. It just got really bad. And long story short, I was finally diagnosed probably a year and a half later in September of 2009. I had every test under the sun. Initially, I was tested for ALS. That was ruled out. MS, that was ruled out. The summer of 2009, I could not run. I could barely walk. I read 9 books in bed that summer. But I would force myself to go out and walk because I found that movement gave me the most relief. The moment I became sedentary and didn't move, I could really feel the sensations. I couldn't hold things. I would drop them. While teaching or speaking to students or to colleagues, all of a sudden, without warning, my fingers would twitch or would fan out, would spaz out. So I had every test on the sun, a lot of blood work. And then they thought I had chronic inflammatory demyelinating polyneuropathy, which is another one of these neurological deficiencies. And it wasn't that. And then I finally went to a top neurologist at Johns Hopkins, and he figured it out. And he gave me back my running legs.
That takes forever to find out some things that isn't just obvious.
Yeah, so what happens is my body apparently does not produce enough natural B12 naturally, you know, in my body. Consequently, my body does not produce the myelin sheath that is required around my spinal cord, that we all need myelin sheath, you know, and the B12 injections, which I am on B12 for life. It changed everything. But I have to tell you, I have permanent nerve damage in my right foot and in my leg. You know, sometimes I'm watching TV, I'm sitting down, and my toes will fan out. They would get stuck. They start to, and I have awful calf pain. Sometimes I'll stretch in the, you know, when I get up in the morning, I stretch in bed. And I'm almost afraid to stretch my legs because I know what might happen. It's very painful. It passes, but it's very painful. And it does have me screaming.
Have you ever used to stop the cramps CBD gel? Because that really stops them right away.
Oh, my God, you are the best, Martha. Right?
Seriously.
Right. No, I'm not kidding. What did I rub on my feet and my toes this morning before this interview because I could CBD cream.
It's true. Yeah. It's true. It works.
It works. And my husband, when he was first diagnosed with stage 4 cancer, had a lot of pain, and it was the CBD oil and the drops. He said it was a godsend.
Yeah.
I'm so glad that you're a CBD.
Well, you know, I have arthritis in my hip, which I'm getting my hip replaced in October, finally, because I haven't been able to run.
I heard that on your latest podcast.
Oh my God. I live with pain like 24/7, I swear to God. And I'm finally getting it done. But it's the only thing that gives me relief. It's only thing that does.
Good. Yeah. And it works. And and I don't like to put chemicals in my body. I'm allergic to 9 pharmaceuticals. And the CBD. So I will rub it on and I run my knees, you know, massage it in, and it does work. It works. And I'm all for it. Definitely. But you know, you've got to make sure that you get the right CBD because there's a lot of fakes out there. Our CBD works and we're just really happy it entered our lives. Yeah.
Yeah, well, that's wonderful. I'm really glad that you're sharing your story, though, because I know it can help so many people. One thing that you talk about, too, is that you are not a vegetarian either, because I know a lot of it affects especially women who are anemic through being vegans, but you are not.
No, I'm not a vegan. No one else in my family is B12 deficient. And it's amazing. I first wrote about a B12 deficiency in my running legs for Huffington Post a few years ago. And I'm still getting letters and emails emails and messaging on my social media from people from all over the world who tell me they share their symptoms with me, who tell me that I give them hope. And a few of them have actually flown to Johns Hopkins to meet my neurologist so that my neurologist can help them get better. It's just amazing. So, a lot of times, you know, what I've also learned through my B12 research is that, sadly, many doctors are clueless about B12 deficiency and sort of a lot of people feel they've been dismissed or they go through so many tests, unnecessary tests, only to find out that all that was needed was a very inexpensive treatment. B12 deficiency is easily treatable and every person will have a different experience. In my case, I need B12 for life. If I don't get my B12 shots, I cannot function normally. It's not a good situation. So once a week, I inject myself. Yeah.
Was that hard to get used to, injecting yourself?
No, I'm not afraid of needles. it was easy. In fact, in the beginning, I would have to go to my primary and then the techs would inject me. And I did this for several years. I've been on B12 now 12 years. Yeah, coming on 12 years. The insurance changed, and then his medical practice was taken over by a huge hospital, and I was paying $47 every time I went in to get a B12 shot, and now it cost me like $3. So I said, this is it. I'm going to do it on my own. And no, I don't have a problem with needles, and I inject myself very easily. It takes a second. My B12, thank God, but it's very debilitating. And the thing with B12 deficiency, in my case, because it was sort of, finally diagnosed a little bit later, I have permanent nerve damage on my right foot. Okay. Mm-hmm. Some people, can develop paralysis, worst case scenario, B12, dementia can lead to dementia, and worst case scenario, psychosis. It's very, very dangerous and very serious if not treated.
Yeah, I can imagine. Now, your strength comes through in your blog, especially when dealing with your husband's cancer.
Mm.
The 10 lessons or rules or I'm not sure what you call it. Pretty awesome that you wrote those down.
Oh, the to-do list?
To-do list. Yes.
Yeah, that came all from experience. And yeah, it was, it was stage 4, rectal cancer that metastasized to his right lung. And immediately, you know, your life's turned upside down, you know, gears are shifted. And one of the first things that we had to do is make sure that we have, you know, he has his advanced directive and is living well. I had mine already. My husband was slow to get his, but boom, we sat down and did it, you know. You know, finding out, you know, I have a very good friend who's an attorney, deals with Social Security disability. And she said, you know, if John is unable to work, don't worry about it. I'll take care of everything for you, you know, all the legal work and all of that. But then, you know, making appointments, staying healthy, exercising, there are all these things, and keeping track. I kept a binder. I kept track of his doctor's appointments with the oncologists, he had two oncologists, with the surgeons, all kinds of surgeons, lung surgeons, gastro surgeons. It was very overwhelming, but I'm very good at organizing things, you know. So, but at the same time, it was very overwhelming. So, yeah, I hope that, you know, people read that. And these are things that if you just do them, you're one step ahead of the game, I guess. But I'm just very happy. He had amazing care, good doctors. We were fortunate that we had a good insurance that, by the way, we pay for on our own. My husband's employer dropped insurance for their employees 2 months before my husband was diagnosed. So we had to scramble. Yeah, we had to scramble for new insurance. But thank God it's just my husband and I, our children are adults. We're grandparents. When I think about it, Martha, you know, it's like this movie, slow motion, you know, but at the end, I had a happy ending. My husband's in remission, so I'm good. Happy.
Good. I was going to ask how he is, but he's doing okay.
Yeah, he's doing great. He was, you know, we were told actually it was last May, a couple of weeks earlier than today, when he had his virtual appointment with this oncologist who shared very quietly and matter of factly that John, you're in remission, and that was the happiest day of my life. So.
Wonderful. Yeah, that is wonderful.
Yeah. Thank
so,
you.
Yes. So what role does running play in help you balance all the stress in your life?
Oh boy. Running is everything. Running is the best medicine. You know, some people who are not runners look at runners and might say, you know, you're addicted. And I say, no, it's not an addiction. It's a healthy practice. Okay, there's a difference. There's dangerous addiction and there's healthy practices. Mm-hmm. And for me, it's a healthy practice. It's my medicine. It's a way for me to stay physically fit, you know, so I can care for others. And it's also when I became a cancer caregiver, you know, self-care. And when I had my medical challenges, like my B12 deficiency, it was terrible to have this B12 deficiency because it was incapacitating to a certain extent. But when I compare it to running an ultra marathon and getting to the finish line after 100 miles, it was nothing, you know, that kind of thing. And so running is healing. And, you know, initially I started running for myself, you know, to stay in shape, to do something for myself, to stay strong. And then when John was diagnosed, running had a new meaning, a new purpose. I was running healing miles. I was running for his healing. Very faithful person. And, you know, I was running for his healing. I was running. For me, running is a form of prayer. Running is my conversation with God. Running is an escape from the noise and the chaos that is our world, you know. And it's good for mental health. It's good for physical health. It's good for our well-being all around. And so I ran for his doctors. I ran for John's healing. And then he got healed. I said, okay, I'm a cancer caregiver. And, you know, you're always a caregiver. You don't stop caring for the person, you know. And then I thought, you know what, I'm going to run for cancer caregivers now. And that's when I created a GoFundMe Ultra Care for Cancer Caregivers to give cancer caregivers a little joy and respite in their lives. You know, according to the American, I think the American Association of Clinical Oncologists, you know, there are close to maybe 6 million caregivers. It ranges from either about 3 million to 6 million caregivers who on an average, you know, provide almost 33 hours a week of care for their loved ones who, you know, are tackling cancer. And, you know, I think there are more cancer caregivers than there are cancer patients, you know. And so, yeah, so I didn't want them to be forgotten, you know, and, it was my way of just expressing gratitude for, my journey as a cancer caregiver and John's journey, you know, tackling his cancer and, you know, being declared in remission. And, I just wanted to give back. And, So far, we are the little GoFundMe has benefited 9 families or cancer caregivers, and I'm always looking for people to nominate a cancer caregiver. If a person is a cancer caregiver, they can nominate themselves, or they can nominate others, and they receive a monetary gift that they can use any way they want. One of a cancer caregiver that was nominated received a monetary gift, and she was so you know, thankful and so appreciative. And she sent me a really beautiful little thank you card, and she said, "I think I know what I'm going to do with them. I'm going to get the gutters in my home clean." And that meant so much to her, you know. Yeah. And just simple things like that, you know. A sister, Saint Teresa of Calcutta, you know, formerly Mother Teresa, once wrote, you know, "We cannot do great things, but we can do little things with great love." Yeah. And that's what I hope to do. So, yeah, I'm still, you know, raising money. So because of COVID and a lot of races have been canceled, of course, I did the virtual ultras. I did a couple of those. And I use those virtual ultras to raise money. So we're almost reaching our goal of $10,000. My ultimate goal is to make this a nonprofit and make it for all kinds of cancer, all kinds of caregivers who take care of all kinds of special people and loved ones in their lives. Who
That's very cool.
That's what I like to do.
That's awesome. We'll put the link along with your blog link on my website.
Oh, thank you so much.
Yeah. Absolutely. You talked about that. There were so many great things in what you just said. I wanted to address a couple of them before we go on. Being out in nature, to me, and I think you feel this way, you know, when you're out in nature, when you're running out in the woods or on a mountain, I mean, you feel as close to God as possible.
Oh, absolutely.
It's like being in church, really.
Yes.
You know, it's better for me out there than being in a man-made building, as far as I'm concerned.
I agree with you. Oh, absolutely. You know, I can feel God's presence. Mm-hmm. I'm sorry, but I do, you know?
Yeah.
And, you know, it's running the trails is so wonderful. You're in, you know, in solitude. And, I also think of those who have gone before me, you know, relatives who have died, relatives and friends who have died of cancer. I love the saints, you know, and what they endure. And and nature, I just love nature so much. You know, we have a garden at home. We started 4 years ago. I love gardening. John and I have been to, I think, 26, 27 national parks. And because we like to be in nature, and I love wildlife. I love all kinds of creatures. And I think it was Saint Ignatius of Loyola who wrote, you know, we can see God in all things. And I believe that very much. So, yeah, nature, just the solitude. It's just all really beautiful. And that's why I love trail running. I like, you know, I take tumbles on the trails, but I get myself up, dust myself off, and just go, because there's joy waiting for me at the end, you know.
Yeah, that's the important part. If you fall down, you get back up, then it's okay.
That's right. Stop whining. Just keep going.
What's your favorite distance to run in a race?
Oh, you know, I have to say I love 24-hour races. I really love those because they're less than 30, you know, for the 100 miler, you know, but I can still do pretty good, you know. I think the longest 24-hour, my first 24-hour, Martha, was I placed third female.
Whoa, which was you.
Which was shocking. It was a road ultra. It was around a lake. It was like 3.1 miles. And it was, unfortunately, the race no longer takes place, but it was around the lake in Massachusetts. I placed third. I think I did 83.3 miles or something like that.
Wow,
yeah.
Nice.
And I got a $100 check sent in the mail. I was like, oh my God, I'm a semi-pro. This is fabulous. Yeah.
I love time races. They're like one big party. They're just really fun.
Yeah, they are. And, and of course, 3 days later, I had my scheduled laparoscopic hysterectomy to remove fibroids because they were getting big. And then my life was turned upside down when much later, over a month later, it was discovered that my left ureter had been transected. And that's why I had been leaking. That's why I had a small bowel obstruction. I had 10 three abdominal surgeries in a 10-week period. Mm. And a sepsis, that sepsis did not kill me, amazed the doctors. And they've all concluded that because I was in such a great physical shape, my immune system was so strong that I had my hysterectomy on August 1st. I had a small bowel obstruction, surgery to unkink my small bowel obstruction, I think 15 days later. And then I had to wait 7 weeks to get my left ureter repair. And this was right before Hurricane Sandy hit New York and New Jersey, the East Coast, Northeast. And guess what, Martha?
What?
Halloween summer, I went back to around the lake as part of my healing journey.
Oh, good.
And I didn't do 83.3 miles. I did 64.5 or something like that. And I placed sixth female. But
awesome.
I wanted to know that I could still do the distance. And it was part of my healing journey. And it was part of me getting back in shape. Yeah.
Very cool. Well, how excited are you to have races come back?
I am excited. In fact, yesterday, I have another one coming up. A real race that was canceled last year is taking place in New York City this year. It's on June 19th, the Great New York 100 miler and the 100K. I'm doing the 100K. It's an urban ultra. And
oh, yeah. That one's a great one. Yeah.
I like to familiarize myself with the terrain if I can get to the terrain, you know. And so John and I drove up to New York yesterday, and we traced the route, you know, in the car, and we could see where I might be running, and then we have to get on the highway sometimes, that kind of thing. I'm a little bit not too worried, you know. But Martha, every time I go into an ultra, you always have self-doubt, and self-doubt is good. I'm like, oh my God, can I do it? Oh my God, I don't know if I can, you know, that kind of thing. Because there are no porta potties.
Oh gosh.
So we're on our own, and you have to figure out where you need to go, and maybe, you know, go into fast food restaurants or little markets, neighborhood markets, you know, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Find a bathroom. And the only thing that concerns me is not the distance, but the noise, because I'm not accustomed to running in noise.
Oh, that's your urban environment, right?
Yes. Cars, beeps, and the maniac drivers, that kind of thing. It's just too noisy. I don't like noise.
Mm. You know? Mm.
And, you know, when you run on a trail, it's that beautiful solitude, you know, the peace that you're surrounded by all this nature and peace. And even on a road ultra, there's some cars around, but it's not an urban ultra. Like my first 100 was an urban ultra, the Philadelphia 100, but that took place in a park and we had to do 12 8.4 mile loops. And so it was noisy, but it wasn't too bad compared to this
one.
Well,
think of the urban think of the noise in this one as music. Think of it as each sound is a different instrument. Think of it that way.
Yeah. Okay, I'll try to channel Martha on that day.
I can do the country and the city. I live in the city right now and it's always noisy. Oh. But you know, I've learned to tune it out when I need to.
Yeah, well, see,
you tune it out.
Yeah, that's good. So I want to try to, like, I live in the suburbs and the roads here, you know, they can be dangerous. I almost got hit by a crazy driver last Monday in the neighborhood, you know. Yeah, so that's my concern. You know, we have 18 hours, so I just want to finish it. You know, I just
You'll do great. You'll rock it.
Yeah, I hope so. And next year, the Dawn to Dusk to Dawn 24-hour track ultra, which was canceled for the second time this year, that's going to take place. Excited about that.
So have you ever, have you thought about, and I'm sure you've thought about, but you should probably write a book about your story and your life adventures?
Well, I'm glad you asked that question. As a matter of fact, when I ran my first 100 miler back in 2011, I came home, you know, with my husband and my son. And my daughter was in Iowa, she was in graduate school. And I said to my daughter, I'm going to write my memoir in 100 days. Naturally, of course, I was hallucinating, you know, literally and figuratively, you know. And so that was 2011, it is now, you know, what, 10 years later. I did finish my memoir and it's in the hands of a literary agent.
Great.
Yeah.
Very
so
good.
I'm excited. And if, you know, if that's something that they're not interested in, I know to, you know, shop it around. But yeah, so I feel really good. Of course, ultra running weaves through everything.
Yes.
The challenges that I've had to face and how I've overcame them. And then it didn't start initially with my husband's diagnosis, but that's how the book starts with John's diagnosis. Everything else. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I can't wait to read it. So.
Oh, and thank you. Okay.
Yes.
I have one reader. I'll let the agent know.
Yes. Yay. So now I have one final question that I always like to ask all my running guests.
Yes.
If you could run any race anywhere, regardless of qualification or distance or travel cost or anything, which race would it be?
Well, I think I've always wanted to run Badwater. Because it's in a national park, you know, Death Valley. And it's not, you know, it's quiet. There's nothing there. Okay. And it's in a desert. That's the closest I'm going to get to a desert, you know. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I first learned about Badwater from Pam Reed and Dean Karnazes on 60 Minutes with Leslie Stahl. And I wanted to do that. But everything changed in 2012 when I had my medical nightmare and my, you know, my body took longer to recover. And that was when I was doing really well. I think I would have become a faster runner. And I was like doing well at my peak. You know, I was placing, I placed second female at the Philadelphia 100. But then, you know, my life was turned upside down with my medical nightmare. But maybe that's something that I would do. I mean, there's other other ultras. But I think Badwater only because I wouldn't tumble on a trail and hit my head. And I like heat and humidity. That's another reason why.
Well, there's no humidity there.
Right. Just lots of, yeah. So just a lot of dry heat, you know?
Yes.
So, we'll see what happens. But I was just telling my husband, John, yesterday, I said, you know what? After this race next year, after the 24-hour next year, I'm retiring. I'm retiring from running. And he's like, yay! Because, you know.
It's like, No, yeah. You're not.
No, exactly. Like he's paced me. He's crewed me. And I'm excited. I'm so glad that running has been such an important part of my life. And my family has been included. My kids, when they were younger, they were my pacers, my crew. And now I have grandchildren. And they enjoy running too.
So. More crew members. Yay.
Absolutely. I can't wait till I'm 80.
Well, thank you so much for being on the show. Your story is inspiring. It is educational. It is uplifting. We all can't wait for your book to be out so we can.
You're the best one. Thank
yes,
so
very much.
Much. I enjoy the show.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you. Yeah. Very, very much. And good luck to everything and best wishes on all the races that you do and your life in the future.
You too. Okay.
All right.
Bye-bye. Happy running.
Thank you so much, Miriam. That was great. You shared so much information with us. Your life has been a big roller coaster ride, and not all of it was fun. I know you, or I should say is fun, really. You've had so many things happen to you, and you take it so bravely and courageously, and just it's amazing. I am just in true awe of you, and I think everybody should hear your story, and hopefully people will be reading your story soon too, because it really does deserve a book. I will be first in line for that book too, I promise you. All right, now stay tuned for Tales of the Trail. Okay, I only have one story in Tales of the Trail this week, and it is my race report from the very first race since COVID for the Coastal Trail Runs. And it is the San Lorenzo River Trail Race. What a great race. What a great day. I decided to volunteer at this race. Since I can't run, I wanted to be there for the first day and just to be part of the energy and the excitement, just being around everyone. I registered people for the half marathon, and I also gave away medals at the end, and we were busy most of the time. There were people, they had a 10K, a half marathon, a 30K, a marathon, and a 50K. So it was pretty much, as soon as we got people registered, people started finishing their races. So it wasn't like we had a whole lot of time in between anything. It was great, though. What a fun day. We got everybody registered. Then during that, everybody but the 10K people started their race. And then just as soon as that happened, 15 minutes later, the 10K people started. And then after that, then people started finishing. I mean, really, it wasn't very long. It was like, I think the first 10K runner finished 39 minutes. 39 minutes for a trail 10K. Then the second runner finished 12 minutes after him. I mean, he blew away everybody. He just totally blew away the course. We were joking, saying that he could have run another 10K and still finished first. He was really good, just really fast. It was a great day. It wasn't cold. It had been warm, too. Even in San Francisco on that Thursday and Friday before the race day, it had been in the 80s, and in San Jose it had been close to 100. So we were expecting really warm temperatures. But in Santa Cruz, it was pretty chilly. It was in the 60s almost all day. The race took place in the small little park, Harvey West Park in Santa Cruz. And it was pretty cloudy, foggy, and then it never cleared up. We saw a little bit of sun towards the end of the day, but it wasn't warm at all. I took my sweatshirt off for about 20 minutes, and then it started getting chilly again, and they put it back on. So it wasn't warm at all. My hip, yeah, it was bothering me. I stood up for most of the day. I took some rest sitting down just because it's really hard for me to stand in one place for too long. So I did have to take some rest, but overall, it was a great day. I had to wake up super early, which is kind of difficult when you work 12-hour days. Because Friday I worked 8 to 8. So then I had to somehow find some way to get to sleep.
which I did not. I got about 3 hours sleep, and then I had to wake up at 4. And then I took Lyft. Oh, no, sorry. I took Uber down to South City to meet my friend. And then we rode down to Santa Cruz. And it's a long ways to Santa Cruz from San Francisco. It's about 60 miles to San Jose, and then it's about maybe 20 more miles to Santa Cruz. So it's a bit of a drive, a little bit of a drive. It was worth it, though. It was very fun. Everyone, it was fun to see everyone and fun to meet people in person that I've only talked to on the phone or in Facebook. And it was just great. What a great day. What a great, great day. I gave out buttons and gave out some of the new buffs and stickers, and it was fun. I should have taken more pictures, but I didn't. I was really busy, actually. They kept me super busy doing things and setting up stuff and taking down stuff and just working. So I was put to work. So that was important. I think they were a little short on volunteers, so they really needed my help. So it was an excellent, excellent day. I'm glad so many people showed up, and it was really fun. And I'm very, very happy for Leng and Wendell and Coastal Trail Runs, because they really take care of the runners. I love them so much. They're just such good people. All right. Now here's my rant. My rant is against Lyft and Uber. And I've been a big supporter of you too. I've really supported you folks. I think your drivers are really nice. I've never had a problem with your drivers. And this is nothing against your drivers, but come on. I checked the price of Lyft yesterday. Not yesterday. Sorry. I checked the price of Lyft Friday, and it was $24 from San Francisco to South San Francisco. So I said, okay, I can handle that. Saturday, I checked the price, like right when I was going to order it, and it was $75. $75 on Lyft to go on the Saturday morning, early morning, like about 5 o'clock, from San Francisco to South San Francisco. $75. So I checked Uber and it was $60. So I took Uber. $60 to go from San Francisco to South San Francisco. That's highway robbery. If I had had a little bit more time, I would have called Yellow Cab to see how much they were. I bet you they'd be cheaper, too. This is ridiculous. Come on. $60 to go what? It isn't even 20 miles. What is it? 10 miles? 12 miles? Come on. That's ridiculous. You guys ripped me off. I can't believe it. I would have paid my friend gas money. I would have paid him $20 to come up to pick me up. Give me a break. That's ridiculous. That's the only thing that was wrong with the day, with Saturday, was that I had to pay so much to Uber. My God, you people have gall to charge so much for that. Thank God I don't have to do that. And I won't do that again. I could rent a car for that. For $20, I could rent a car for overnight for that. Oh my God, I can't believe it. I cannot believe it. But anyway, that is my rant, and that's all I'm going to say. I'm done with that, and that is this week's Tales. Oh, and before I say that, races are opening up, so go out and race. Even if you're not prepared, go out and do a 5K or a 10K or something. Support your local race companies. And that is this week's Tales of the Trail. And that wraps up this week's episode. Thank you so much for listening. Check out MarthaRunsTheWorld.com for all the links for Miriam and her blog and her GoFundMe page. You can check all that out. You can also check out my Patreon page on the website. You can become a Patreon patron and get a new buff. They are pretty rocking. You want one. And there are new episodes on Patreon as well, so you can check that out. And you can email me at martharunstheworld@gmail.com. And until next week, let's tie up our shoelaces and go for a run.